Today is Tuesday, October 27, 2020. This is a Part 6 Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Richard Hanson, H-A-N-S-O-N. And my name is Tom Martin. Hey, good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good. I kind of want to say good afternoon, but that's where I am, and still morning where you are, so good morning. Richard, may we have your permission to record this oral history interview over the telephone?
Yes.
Thank you. We wrapped up part five, talking about your time at Grand Canyon as the trail crew foreman. And I wondered if you could tell me a couple more stories about your time there as a foreman, some of the other interesting things that you did or participated in.
Yeah, I'm just going to be, can't be specific on dates, but it's going to be through like a 3-year, 8-month time frame was all I was at the canyon. But I think we were talking about basically how I was in over my head the first year, and then finally starting to kind of get a feel for the job and playing baseball. And I think that's pretty much where we left it. Playing on a pretty much all Ranger baseball team as one of two maintenance guys on the team. At that time, maintenance and Rangers were like oil and water. Although I've got some of the Rangers are some really good friends of mine now. More so than, I still in contact with a couple of the guys that worked with me on my crew.
Cool.
But so stories, different things, basically, is after my first river trip, and I think we talked about that with, and then meeting Crumbo, we talked about that, and Larry May, and some other people, I really got a feel for the river. That was another thing that I had no experience doing. And Crumbo and a guy by the name of Sam West basically taught me how to row a boat. Crumbo was brute force, power through everything. Sam was more finesse and strategy. And I took a little bit of from both of those guys and kind of developed my own little style. I did Park Service trips. We used to do them about twice a year, and we would bring on some volunteers and my crew, and we would spend 28, 29 days on the river, three or four days at different spots where we had work lined up. I think we talked about Nankaweap and South and some other projects, Deer Creek. And I just fell in love with the place. It was, again, for me, still part of the process of healing, of just being out there. And it was wonderful.
Nice.
Then I hooked up with a guy by the name of Paul Winter. I don't know if you've ever heard of Paul.
Oh, yeah.
And the rim, and I think it was he was there for a night sky conference, dark sky. They first started talking about light pollution, you know.
Ah.
And we started talking, and the next day I hiked him in to the canyon, where he took a sax. He says, I've always wanted to play my instrument in the Grand Canyon. So we hiked in down BA, down the BA for a couple, 3 miles. And he started playing his sax, and we were looking down on the river. And
so this is, he's like got this saxophone kind of on a strap over his shoulder, or does he like have it in a little case?
He's got it in a case.
Wow.
And then we sit down and
and you're just walking. Playing.
Yeah, we just walked down a couple
okay.
miles.
Like down to 3 Mile House or something like that?
Yeah, right in that area.
Okay.
Yeah. And he started playing, and the acoustics were just insane in there.
Wow.
Then we started talking. We were looking at the river, and I told him about the trips that I'd done. I'd probably done maybe 4 or 5 trips by that time. And he, you know, started talking about, you know, man, I want to do an album down there. I just want to do this and I want to do that. And so we went back up to the rim, and I hooked him up with my friend Sam, who was also my next door neighbor. He was probably the lead boatman for the river unit at the time. And he said, we started talking about how we could make this work. And Sam was good friends with George Went.
Okay.
And rode for Oars for an eternity. So Sam took it from there. And I think it was the next spring when we did our first trip with the Paul Winter consort through the Grand Canyon. We had he brought the whole friggin' band. There was a portable organ, but it was big.
Wow.
Do you know a guy by the name of Steve Trimble? It's a photographer there. But anyway, he's got some great pictures of this trip.
Okay.
And I would recommend to you to check out Canyon Consort. It's a hour-long, 70-minute documentary on making this album.
Where does Steve live?
I thought he lived in Flag.
Okay.
But that was a long time ago, too. So, but anyway, we made this trip, and all the musicians and stuff were from New York.
Hmm.
Because that was, Paul was an artist in residence, and the concert was the artist in residence of St. John of the Divine Cathedral.
Oh, okay.
In Harlem.
Hmm.
Organ player was the organist for the church also. I mean, these were fabulous, fabulous musicians.
Wow.
And a vocalist by the name of Susan Osborne, Paul Halley, Eugene Friesen, just David Darling on cello. We had all these friggin' instruments. And,
wow.
And that was the first time on that trip. That's when that was my first time as the captain of my own boat.
Oh, wow.
I had made, like I say, 4 or 5 trips and had been doing, you know, picking up some rowing time here, rowing time there, starting to run some of the bigger rapids. But and I had a guy, the naturalist on the trip was a man by the name of Peter Warshall.
How do you spell Peter's last name?
W-A-R-S-H-A-L-L.
Thanks.
And he was a lifelong friend.
Nice.
And
was he working for the park as a naturalist?
No, he was actually he had been the editor of Whole Earth.
Oh wow!
For a while, and had just kind of backed away from that, and had moved to Arizona. And he was living down in Tucson.
Okay.
Still did some work for Whole Earth, but
how did you meet him?
We met on the bus trip down to Lee's Ferry.
Okay.
And we were making introductions, and you know, and Peter goes, "Yeah, Peter Warshall," and he was actually he was doing some stuff for Whole Earth because he mentioned Whole Earth and some other things that he'd been doing. And I had another friend that worked for Whole Earth. I just looked at him and I said, "Do you know J.D. Smith?" He says, "Oh, yeah, I know J.D. well." And I just pointed my finger at Peter, and I said, "Well, you're on my boat. This is going to be my first trip rowing a boat, and you're going to be on my boat."
Cool.
And he said, "No problem, you know." And the sound guy was a guy by the name of Mickey Houlihan, that, again, is turned into another lifelong friend. And he had done a bunch of work with Paul before. They had gone down and did whale sounds in the Sea of Cortez and lots of different things.
Huh.
And he was an incredible sound man. And it was just it was a wonderful trip. I took leave and became an employee of Oars on those trips. I wasn't representing the government or anything.
Okay.
I was a Oars guy for 3 weeks. And it was just met so many people that are still friends today.
Cool.
On those first couple of trips. We wrapped that first trip up, and I think Paul was always tight with money. You know, I mean, just that's a big undertaking.
Yeah.
He got a sweet deal. But we wrapped up that trip by doing a concert in Flagstaff.
Oh, wow.
I know. Because he needed bus money. I don't know. And that was fun. That was really fun. And it was a pretty good turnout, and he had the couple of the boatmen come up and, you know, blow conch or friggin' shake rattles. And I did 3 more of those trips just in support of that Canyon album and movie. That's when, on that first trip, Nancy Helene now, had come down to the canyon with Paul, and she was one of his backup singers, and she has a voice that's just friggin' incredible. And about 3 or 4 days into the trip, I saw her riding. She was riding in Big Fella's boat. And basically the rest is history.
Hmm.
And I talked to Nancy the other day for a long time. It's the first time we'd talked in a while, but those are other people that became on that trip.
Cool.
That became, you know, lifelong friends.
And Big Fellow is Bruce Helene.
Bruce. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And they came off of that trip a couple.
Hmm. And, cool.
And yeah. You know, it was a river of romance that friggin' worked, you know. And been together now, what, 35 years or
yeah,
more than that?
Yeah. Maybe 40, 45.
Yeah.
No.
And made a hell of a
mid-80s? Yeah, 35 years, right?
Yeah. So they've done really well.
Yeah.
And the second trip, that's when the movie was done. And say David Vassar, who had done the Stoneman Meadows movie, was the director on it. And another guy, the funding behind it was a guy by the name of John Lydon, and spectacular man.
How do you spell John's last name?
You know, I'd have to turn my phone. Lydon, Lyddon, something like that.
Okay,
but
roughly,
don't
yeah.
quote me.
Well, that gets us to a start. Okay.
Yeah.
So John's the funder.
And,
can I have you go back for just a minute, Richard? You met Peter Marshall in the bus. This is going to be your
Warshall.
I'm sorry. Thank you. In the bus. This is going to be your first trip rowing. How did that? I mean, were you pretty comfortable rowing? I mean, any surprises? What worked? What didn't work?
Well, by mid trip, I became known as the "Where is your boatman?" Boatman.
Wait, what?
The "Where is your boatman?" Boatman. We were on a tight schedule because they wanted to get certain places at certain times, and it's the only time I've ever done it was we went from below Hants all the way through the Inner Gorge to, I think the next night camp was Bass or something.
Okay, long way.
A lot for miles.
Yeah.
Plus
Phantom.
Yep. And I was, there was big water. And I was knocked out of the bus. Never flipped. But I was knocked out of the boat like three or four times. And Peter never lets me forget it, you know. So basically grab a rope and then they'd pull me back in and I'd sit back up there. And we got to that camp, I was just friggin' fried. And, you know, they said, "Hey, you're the where is our boatman boatman?" I wasn't in the chair. I wasn't up there on the cooler.
Right. Well, those lucky people get to hold on to straps. You get to hold on to a couple of toothpicks flailing in the water.
That's it, man. You know, and it's like, but I survived. I did the bubble run at Lava because Big Fella told me everybody was going to cheat left, do what they call the spider duster run.
Huh.
As you went over left and as close to the brush there as you could get, you know.
Yep.
And we're sitting there.
The spider duster. Okay.
And the the Bubble Run, it was like four or five friggin' bubbles, you know, just in the water. And you had to line up totally on those bubbles, or you would just hit the fall hole, you know. And we're sitting there looking at it, and actually sat there for way too long because we were waiting on a helicopter to film going through lava, and they had to have perfect sun. And I think we sat there, looked at that for three or four hours, which was just fucked.
Whoa, that's hot.
Yeah. And so everybody's talking about their runs, you know. And Big Fella says, it's your first trip rowing through lava. I said, yeah. He says, well, you're not going over the spider duster. He says, let's do the Bubble Run. You and I will do the Bubble Run. And I said, okay. And he went first, and I followed him, made it through. I've got an epic picture of myself, Peter Warshall's in the boat, and Paul Winter's in my boat during this first run. They're going, shit, Paul said, it's your first trip, I'm going with you. And got an epic photo taken by a guy by the name of John Dumont, who, again, that's another lifelong friend. I bet I've said a dozen people's names that I'm still friend and in contact with today, if they're not, a couple of them are dead, but John Dumont, D-U-M-O-N-T.
Thank you.
Interesting character, had worked for Greenpeace, always been a huge environmentalist, and still a wonderful guy. Now he's gone from photography into painting, and
he's
doing good. So that was the end of the first trip.
Was this 1984-ish?
I think so, yeah.
Because you know, you're talking about the spider duster run. For the water to be high enough to go into the vegetation on River Left, it's got to be running 35, 40,000 maybe?
Yeah, I don't know if that much, but
they were trying to get that reservoir down. They were trying to get water out of that thing, too. So they spent a lot of time at, you know, full generator capacity.
Yeah, I remember that. There was, you know, sometimes back in the day there, it was in the peaking power days, you know, they would cut your friggin', you know, if you were happened to be anywhere with weekend water,
right,
we would call that, you didn't have any friggin' water.
Right, it would just go to ground. They just turned the dam off.
Yeah.
Well, they let out a minimum base flow. But then they would crank it back up on Monday morning, and so that wall of water would eventually catch you somewhere downstream.
Right, usually a couple of days, you know. But so I can't really say what the water was. It was big. Everybody was, you know, commenting on it's big.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
And Crystal, the first time I ran that was big.
Yes.
And, God, I forget the guy's name. So interesting stuff.
Fun.
And
so did that that trip, I'm assuming, ended at Diamond Creek?
Yeah.
And for someone who'd gone through what you'd gone through, did that trip help you at all in kind of rebuilding your self-esteem or your ability to say, you know what, I can do this?
Yeah, I think so, you know. There was you know, once you're down there, man, there's no way out. So, you know, it's more like you can and you have to do this. You know, I have to do this. I'm the captain of this boat. And, but yeah, and after getting through it and being as physically tired and beat up as I've been in a long time, and I look back on it, and I look back on it today, I was going, shit, you only do something the first time once, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's it. And that one there, and then still having so many people that you're friends with, we talk about it. And I mean, a couple, 3 years ago, I went, and another guy, another boatman on the trip was Tom Huntington, and another huge environmentalist. He worked for what was the river? Environmental River. He was on the Tuolumne, Save the Tuolumne team. He was one of the three people that chained themselves to rocks down there.
Okay.
Just a great guy. And we're really tight. He lives in San Francisco now. And,
cool.
And he worked Environmental Defense Fund.
Okay.
And I go there, used to go there twice a year, got a beautiful place on Russian Hill, yada, 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 and still fighting the good fight.
Cool.
Still real active. Right now he's working for the Getty Foundation, handling all of their grant applications for environmental causes.
Okay.
And so just to be tied up with those kinds of people and Peter was something else. And and it all into the good fight, you know.
Cool.
And that was like I always you know, I was active in a different way. You know, I was active in the war, active streetwise.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am with a bunch of people that are much more environmentally conscious than I was. And knew much more about that fight and so I walked away from there with after that first trip with you know kind of a new cause and new friends and new learning, you know. I was one of those guys that, and I still try to today, I think I told you this, you try to learn one new thing every day. You know, that was my philosophy. You learn one new thing every day, and you're 72 years old, well, you know, you know a little something.
Yeah.
And I took to, you know, learning more about dams and water and pollution and, you know, just it's set me up and I'm definitely not a scholar. You know, I struggle with writing a little letter, but you know, if I want to be, I can get articulate. So that I got a lot out of that trip.
Cool.
And then I did, you know, three more with him.
Okay.
With Oars and with the second trip with with making the movie when we had Vassar, that added a whole new element to the trip.
Like what? I'm just thinking, you got to keep sand away from the machines and the light, and there's so much that's got to work out right, and you got one shot at it.
Yeah. And film people are much more demanding than music people.
Ah.
And Vassar, he wasn't that really nice a guy. And we were just, on that first trip, everybody was hard as a friggin' band, you know? I mean, everybody was, it got tight, and everybody was real tight. And,
nice.
And second trip, there was a little more people because of the film guys and all the cameras and all that shit.
Yep.
And
was Paul there with his band as well?
Yeah.
Whoa. So now it's not just like the organ and the singers and all the, you know, cellos and all that stuff, but now you got all the film people stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Like I say, they were up. I think it was it was just weird, you know. They would say, okay, we're gonna be filming up here. So you had all, we were Sherpas. We ended up being nothing but fucking Sherpas.
Wow.
And we did have a Sherpa rebellion day when all the boatmen just told Vassar, fuck you. You want that shit up there, you take it up there. So there was some conflict. The end product was actually pretty good. I watched it with the money guy, John Lydon, 3 years ago. John and Tommy and I, first time I'd seen it in probably 10. And we just laughed. God damn, we just fucking laugh. We'd have to pause it and laugh and tell stories. But my daughter came down on that trip. She would have been 12, maybe 13. We had a karmic friggin', and I'm sure it was karmic, Sam was supposed to get permission from some of the tribes, it was Matt Cat, whether we could go up there and set up and record, you know.
Okay, and that's a heavy lift to get stuff up to the patio up there if that's where you were going.
Yeah, when you camp downstream.
Oh, well.
For about half a mile, that one camp on the left.
Yeah, Matt Cat Hotel.
You
carried all your stuff back up.
Yeah. And that was when we had Sherpa de Maya Day.
Whoa, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. But I came to find out that we'd been denied permission. Is that the Wallapai, or who controls the, I don't know, it's not the Supai, but anyway, we were denied permission to haul gear up there. We were going to be there for 2 days, because the acoustics are just, they're insane there.
Right.
And so Sam had taken me aside or something and said, you know, we got to do this. We're not supposed to do it, but we got to do it, you know, that kind of shit. And so we had our afternoon Sherpa de Maya. and then we got the shit up, because those guys definitely, instead of us just doing all the carrying, everybody got involved.
Okay.
The film crew, the musicians, and all of that. And Paul's manager at the time, named John Azzaro, really, really wonderful guy. We were up listening to the music, and then they wanted a couple of people to stay with the instruments because we were going to be back up the next day. And I told Sam, he was the trip leader, that I wasn't going to do it. I didn't think it was right that if they didn't want us here, that we were here in the first place. And anyway, we wrapped up the next day and went down, got everything on the boats. And I don't, now Matt Cap to Havasu is how many river miles?
Well, let's see. Upset's about 150. Havasu's got to be about 156, and Matt Cat's got to be about 146 ish. So maybe 10 miles. I'm just
12 miles. Yeah,
guessing.
That's about right. Because the next day we stopped at Havasu, and everybody that wanted to was going to hike up to the village, and a couple of three people, Tom Huntington, and I think Dickie, were going to head all the way up and meet some paying customers that were coming in for the last week of the trip, and another fundraising deal on Paul's part.
Okay.
Actually had a Rockefeller, I think it was about five people that hiked in.
That's a, if they weren't hiking from Supai and they were coming in from the rim, that's a 20-some mile hike.
Yeah, I think they were meeting them at the village.
Okay.
Guys hiking out there were meeting them at the village. They'd been there the night before.
Got it, all right.
So I'm the drag guy, the last guy, and we're spread out. I think there's probably 15 or 16 people on the trail from our group. And you know how that trail, man, I mean, there's water, and there was no maintenance on it.
Right. So, lots of water crossings and grapevines and...
Yeah.
Yeah. Good place to get lost.
So about two or three friggin' miles in, John Azzaro falls about 25 feet into a little side creek and fractures his femur.
Aye.
Yeah. And I know this is until my wife went thud in front of me. That was the worst fucking fall I'd ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. I knew exactly what happened. And I ran up trail a little bit past John, started hollering, and I got Tommy and I got a couple other ones that were going to go up and meet the incoming group. I said, get us an AeroVac. We're going to need a fucking AeroVac. That's your number one thing. And I got three or four others. This is a come back here. We got to get John out of this creek he's sitting in. And it was an ordeal.
So I'm assuming you had you know, very little material to build any kind of splint with. You had no meds to treat with.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That stuff would have been back at the boat.
And that's, you know, that's what we did, was I sent somebody back to the boat to get everything that we had.
Okay.
We got him moved a little bit. And then he was into shock, you know, doing the whole bit.
Right.
And I still had some medical skills that, you know, like I'd only been back from Nam, what, 10 years or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And been taking wilderness EMT and that kind of shit. And long story short, you've probably heard the name Ernie Kunzel.
Yes.
Yeah. So, what kind of communication did we have? I think
there would have been a phone at the village.
Yeah, and that's, but Sam might have brought his park radio.
Ah.
Also, which turned in real fucking handy when the flight, the air evac took place.
Yeah.
But he was down where he broke his leg for a good 4 hours.
Mm.
Windy, super windy fucking day. Super windy. And we ended up making a little, what do you call those? Something like the Native Americans used to pull behind their horses.
Mm-hmm.
But basically a stretcher, but the cowboy name would be something else. And we had to move them a little bit to get them up to the zone. And the whole day, and I at that time, I thought John was the wrong one to get hurt, because I don't think he had any say in whether we were going to stop at Mat Cat or not. But to this day, I still believe that was a karmic reaction. And we got him out, and he stayed in Flagstaff for, God, it was months. And then when he got out of the hospital, when he was headed to the airport to fly back to Cali, one of the pins or something snapped and he broke it again.
Oh my God.
And he's back in the friggin' hospital. And I'd lost touch with him. And he eventually quit Paul. And then about 8 or 10 years ago, he calls me up and he says, I'm in the Big Island. He says, I got your phone number from, I think, Mickey. Him and Mickey were good friends, too, because they'd been through a few wars with Paul. And he came up, and we caught up, and it was so much fun.
Wow.
And he was working for prison reform.
Huh.
And, you know, this is a white Jewish boy, and he was into it with everything he had.
Wow.
And so that turned the rest of the trip into, you know, a drag, basically.
Mm-hmm.
We had all these new people on board, you know, five of them, I think, the number. And we were just emotionally drained from the rescue and the shit that went down in Havasu. But we, you know, soldiered through and ended that trip.
Hey, Richard.
The movie acts pretty good.
I'm going to go back to Ernie Kunzel. As some of the other people, Ernie's passed away now. Some of the other people mentioned, you wouldn't necessarily want to hang out with him just for fun, but if there was any kind of trauma, he was the guy who would save people's lives.
That's exactly right. And he saved John Azaro's. And I think Tom Caldwell was the pilot that day. Might have been Doc. But I think it was Tom. And they did a friggin' amazing job.
On a windy day to get a helicopter into Havasu Canyon. That's, get it up to a landing zone. That's a good challenge.
That was a challenge. And it was a challenge for all the boatmen, too, just making it happen and stabilizing and just, all of the above. And I'm sure, Sam, we did have a radio because we were able to talk with the ship.
Okay. What do you remember about Tom Caldwell?
Well, he was he wasn't a cowboy. He was very meticulous. Nice guy. Guy you'd want to have a beer with. The other pilot I preferred, and all I knew him by was Doc.
Okay.
Doc. And they were both excellent. And they were the two pilots. They would rotate, working for the park and then doing the tour thing.
Uh-huh.
But I like Tom. And I understand he's dead, too.
That's right.
He died in a helicopter crash?
He did. Two helicopters here in Flagstaff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's right. One of them was a medical.
They both were.
They both were. Yeah, he was... Doc was a little more of a cowboy.
Okay.
Tom was, you felt pretty good with Tom. In fact, that was Doc. When I was leaving the canyon, I got a radio call that I'd been offered the job at Olympic, and I was down at Roaring Springs, and they sent a ship in for me, and it was Doc, and I said, shit, this is like my last freaking flight out of the canyon, bro. I said, shit, let's make it a good one. he said, yeah, instead of the 9 or 10 minutes it would take normally. He took off, and flew through the gorge all the way to Bright Angel. Never got above the fucking wall.
Wow.
Just followed the river. Man, I could see it this day. Boom, boom, boom. Just all these turns, and then we hit Bright Angel Creek, down at Phantom, and then he turned right and flew the river at about 100 feet all the way to Bass.
Wow.
And then we figured, shit, they're going to wonder why this 10-minute flight took 30-something. Anyway, so that was my last trip out. But I heard that Tom had been in a crash there and flag. And Ernie died of cancer or something?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, he was, whoever told you what you just told me, that, yeah, you wouldn't be hanging out drinking with him and shit, but if you needed somebody to come get you, he was the guy. And so, yeah, that trip ended. That was the second trip.
So very different from the first.
Very different from the first. And later on that same fall, and Bruce and Nancy weren't invited on that second trip. But the third trip, the three-boat trip, and we were just, Paul didn't come, the band didn't come. It was a couple of pretty famous photographers that were looking to shoot the album cover and the cover for the movie and, you know, all of that.
Just to get some stills.
Yeah, get a bunch of stills. And myself, Terry Bryant, you remember Terry?
No. I mean,
he's a flat. He was a river legend.
Okay.
TB, Terry Bryant, and Big Fella and I.
Okay.
Were the three boatmen. And, you know, so basically, those guys had had hundreds of trips.
Right.
And I was working, I would have been on my, I didn't do a Park Service. I did one. So I'd have been working on maybe my fourth trip rowing a boat down the friggin' river, you know? And, what we had also was GoPros on our boats. So we could get kind of like GoPros, you know, cameras mounted so that they could fill out some more rapid stuff for the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a kind of a trying trip also. Like I said, those guys have been on hundreds of trips. And there's no doubt that I did slow them down. But they left me one day. I didn't see them for 20 miles. And I fucking got into camp. And, you know, I came up to about Big Fella's belly button. And I just told him, what you guys did was fucking unacceptable. Unacceptable. And got into it, started poking my finger in Big Fella's chest, and, you know, on and on and on and on. But it was a tough trip for me.
Hmm.
And good friends with those guys, you know. And they did, you know, apologize. But, yeah, so those are the Paul Winter stories. And I would say to watch that video.
Yeah.
Or listen to the album, too. Just called Canyon.
Nice.
Okay. And 59 minutes, 40 seconds.
Yeah, I'm looking at my time here, going 54 minutes here. Okay. Well, this would be a good place to wrap this up then.
Yeah.
Okay. This will conclude part 6, Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with Richard Hansen. Today is October 27, 2020. My name is Tom Martin. Richard, thank you so very much.
Yeah, thank you. You're good at what you do here. You've got a nice voice for it. And you asked ask good questions, and
you're very kind. You're very kind.